call the House Committee on State and Federal Affairs to order July 5th, 2005, and I guess it's a little after two. And open a work session on Senate Bill 806.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 806 was on the floor last week and came back to this committee over concerns about whether the 180-day notice would apply to a required notification with 180 days in order to bring suit, and it would have, and what the dash A5 amendments do, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it still has the situation where a private nonprofit organization providing transportation services, it puts them in with the definition of public bodies where they're providing transportation services and where they get more than 50% of their funding from a public body for those purposes. So it puts them under the tort claim limitations. But what it does over on page 3 of the bill, it excludes it from the requirement of giving notice within 180 days. So you'll see on page 3, the claim is against a private nonprofit organization that provides public transportation services as described in 3264F. And what this says, an action arising above the requirements that notice of a claim be given under this section of subsection 7 to this section do not apply if. So that means you would have, I believe, 2 years of the tort claims limitations if it was a tort action to bring a claim. Okay.
Representative
McPherson,
this kind of
this fixes the problem, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. It was a little embarrassing to me to have one of my colleagues who he was trained as a lawyer but no longer practices raise this issue on the floor, and I did not have a good response. And I figured it being ready to become law, but for a governor's signature, we needed to fix this little item.
And it looks like we've got the fix. Does someone want to move the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I move that the A5 amendments be moved into Senate Bill 806A.
Representative McPherson has moved the A5
amendments. It's a dash 5.
Dash 5, yes.
Into Senate Bill 806A. Any further discussion, objections? Okay, therein.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate Bill 806A, as amended, be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative McPherson has moved Senate Bill 806A as amended to the floor with a due pass. Any further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Bopez?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Senate Bill 806A, as amended, moves the floor with a due pass, and we'll let you carry it for the second time.
I would appreciate the chance to redeem myself, Mr. Chair.
Open a work session on Senate Bill 1025A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1025A allows the use of an individual's DNA sample or genetic information for anonymous research or coded research if the individual was deceased when the individual's biological specimen or clinically individual identifiable health information was obtained. Requires a health care provider that a covered entity to inform the individual the individual's biological specimen or clinical individuality identifiable health information be disclosed or retained for the purpose of anonymous or coded research. The chair, members of the committee, you have the A4 amendments in front of you. They make changes over on page 5 of the bill, and I would suggest that maybe these amendments are agreed to. They are intended to cure I don't want to call it a drafting problem, but a misunderstanding between the parties on this bill, and I believe all parties feel that this has clarified the issue, but you may want to call them up for some comments on the record.
Bruce Bishop isn't here, is he? Okay. Perhaps we could have Dave come up, Betsy, and Bob. Bob here. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, David Fidanke, Executive Director, ACLU of Oregon. Senate Bill 1025 makes some very important changes to the Oregon Genetic Privacy Act that will provide more flexibility for researchers using genetic information, but also improves the notice requirements to Oregonians that their biological specimens and clinical information might be used in the future for genetic research and provides an opportunity for patients to opt out of genetic research at the time they're given that notice. That is a new requirement that was included in the ANGRES bill that ACLU strongly supports. In particular, the bill will permit greater flexibility for doing coded research with genetic information, which under current law required full-blown informed consent. And this bill will permit coded research with less than informed consent if patients have been provided that notice and the opportunity to opt out at some time during their treatment with a healthcare provider who is a covered entity under the Federal Health Insurance Portability Act, HIPAA. Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say clearly on the record here that there is a timeline put in place in the bill for implementation of this notice and opt-out procedure. The intent of the legislation, and we believe the clear language of the legislation, provides for a great amount of flexibility for the Department of Human Services to adopt rules for carrying out the implementation of this new notice for providers. They'll be able to provide that notice in a number of different ways, in a number of different forms, both, in a patient's hand or through some other means, such as electronically, because some providers communicate with their patients in that way. The A4 amendments, as council has put them forward to you, are merely a technical fix for one portion of the ANGRES bill, and I believe all the parties are in agreement that they implement what we thought was in the ANGRES bill, but which hadn't been drafted quite the way we had anticipated.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Betsy Earls, representing Kaiser Permanente. Kaiser Permanente and its Center for Health Research are one of just a few important researchers working in Oregon on genetic research generally. And this ANGRES version of Senate Bill 1025 will make a great deal of difference for all of our researchers at the Center for Health Research as they attempt to go about the day-to-day business of collecting groups of specimens in order to perform their research. Kaiser very much appreciates the help and the work that ACLU has done on the bill, and we are looking forward to implementation.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Bob Domingue, Oregon Health and Science University. Can't add much more other than we also appreciate what folks have done, and this will help OHSU. As you may have seen recently, we ranked one ahead of Harvard in the NIH funding rankings, and we're proud of that, and this will help keep us there.
Committee members, do you have any questions? It's a bad day when you don't make it.
Right. I thought you were going to say it's a good day.
The 4th of July did wear him out, didn't it?
Chair, members of the committee, if I could ask Betsy Earle to help me out on this. We went through Friday on the amendment and what the problem was, and if we could walk through that again for the committee,
certainly.
I'd appreciate it. If you could go to the particular page.
Certainly. Okay. Let's start with the ANGRES bill, if we could, and turn to page 6. If you see there on page 6, line 42, we have a new subsection G. And if you go back up to line 27, we have old language that was formerly denominated subsection A. And the practical effect of the way this bill was drafted is that G refers to language which will open up the process of opting out for patients who wish to opt out of genetic research or who choose not to. But the way A was written, it would have negated that new opting out, loosening up provision. So it's because if you have five and then you have A, B, C, D, and they were all ands. It wasn't you can do this or you can do this or you can do this. It said you have to do this and this and this. So A negated G. So the dash four amendments fix that problem so that it's A or G. Okay? And then if you go over to page 7, on line 17, you'll see sub C. And that clause said that except as provided in paragraph sub B, which is right above, a person must have specific informed consent to use a DNA sample or genetic information that's obtained on or after June 25th of 2001. And that sub B that it refers to only has to do with institutional review board waiver of necessary consent. And institutional review boards aren't something that I can explain very clearly. But I'll tell you that the intent of the parties was that this section also sweep in the opt-out provisions that we just looked at under G, so that if somebody didn't opt out of having their sample used for genetic research, they could also have it, researchers could also use that. So it was just another clearing up of a technical drafting issue.
Somewhat.
Sorry. Did that help?
Okay. Any further questions for this group? Okay, that's fine. Bruce, did you want to speak to us just a minute? Tell us where you are on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Bishop, appearing on behalf of the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. I'm appearing for Gwen Dayton, who's both the interim president of the Hospital Association and one of the co-chairs of the advisory committee. She has been actively involved in Senate Bill 1025 and supports it as a balanced approach to allowing coded research to proceed, but also to protect the rights of individuals. She also asked me to furnish you with copies of the just finished report of the advisory committee, a statutorily required report, and I'll be pleased to furnish you copies because I'm sure you'll all want to pore over it in the next 10 or 12 hours to be conversant on their recommendations. I would be glad to respond to any questions, and I would be glad to read portions of the report for you if you would be interested in that.
Here's a threat. I would assume that would make the bill difficult to pass.
Then I'll be quiet.
Committee members have any questions? We'll put the dashboards in.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendment to Senate Bill 1025.
Representative Boquist has moved the dash four amendments into Senate Bill 1025A. Any objections? Amendments are in.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1025 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Boquist has moved Senate Bill 1025A as amended to the floor with a due pass. Any objections? Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Boquist?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Senate Bill 1025A as amended moves to the floor with a due pass. And Representative Boquist, would you carry?
I'd be delighted. Bill will be there, too. Right, Bill?
That's right.
I don't know anything about this one.
I'm not Nutmeg Togos.
I'll blame you.
We'll have Bruce outside to answer all questions.
Open a work session on Senate Bill 1050.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1050 comes to you from the Senate Committee on Rules, modifies the eligibility for child support requirements of a child attending school, that is a child 18 years of age or older and under 21 years of age, requires the child to make satisfactory academic progress as defined by the school rather than maintain a C average, but allows parental access to child's academic records so long as access is consistent with state and federal law requirements concerning the disclosure of student records. Requires a child to carry at least one half course load, allows reinstatement support obligations when the parent receives written confirmation of the school that the child is attending school. The Department of Justice's Support Enforcement Division receives notice from the school that the child is attending school, defines regularly scheduled break as a summer semester term, a period of time not exceeding 4 months between graduation or completion of school and the beginning of the next regular school term, a period of time between the end of the beginning of regularly scheduled consecutive school semesters. Any other scheduled break between course of study. It clarifies a child is a party to the proceedings effective upon passage but operative September 1, 2005.
Okay, thank you.
Any amendments, Mr. Chair, members of the committee?
I do not see anyone here that, other than Ronell Schenkel and the witnesses that she has with her that may be interested in. That's her kids.
Okay, questions?
Just refresh my memory, Council. There was a bill that I think originated in the House side that addressed only the high school.
Yes, that's right, Mr. Chairman.
And is that bill would that be superseded maybe by this, because it dealt, I think, with the C average issue, if I remember.
Mr. Chairman, the committee,
that bill has not moved, if I'm correct, out of the Senate Judiciary Committee. This bill would supersede as it relates to the C average, but this applies in Oregon. A child attending school also includes college,
right,
up to age 21. That's not the majority of states, but still there are a significant number of states that still do that. And this pertains to that plus the other issue. So you could have a kid who's still in high school but has just turned 18.
Okay.
Not unusual for kids to turn 18 in their senior year of high school.
Sure. And then a further question, is it current law that it's 18 to 20, because it says and under 21 years of age? So is there any obligation, can there be a child support obligation at 21 or older?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, no.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, The bill we had out was concerned about there was a kid who turned 18 in April or May,
mm-hmm,
and he wasn't getting good grades in high school, and the dad says, I'm not paying child support anymore.
That's right.
And the House bill, we felt that they as long as the kid was still attending high school, they ought to pay to get him through high school,
right.
And then the agreement was if they're not working in college, that's fine, that'd be cut off. But this could put somebody out in their senior year, chop off the support for a kid going to high school who's not doing well in high school.
Sure, members of the committee, if this bill does not pass and the other bill does not pass, Representative Barker, that still could be the case. But it's my understanding if this bill passes, and I'm seeing Ronell Schenkel go like this, that would not be the case.
It just says an educational facility such as a high school.
Okay, we got somebody coming. Let's see if they say.
Chair Krieger and Representative Barker. For the record, my name is Shaney Fuller, and I am with the Oregon Department of Justice, Oregon Child Support Program. Your question with regard to a child who is 18 and still in high school, House Bill 2499 did propose to remove the C average requirement for that child. This bill entirely does away with the C average requirement and instead replaces it with the requirement. Oh, I forget the language, but it's to maintain satisfactory academic performance. And that is a term that is defined by educational institutions for federal loan purposes. So a high school per se would not have a definition for that, but so long as they're in school and maintaining some attendance and going to school, they would meet those requirements.
So the kid is essentially flunking out, but he's still attending. I mean, that's the $24.99, that's what that was aimed at, because somebody's trying to chop off child support. And so as long as the kid, I mean, I don't want some kid that's a senior in high school a month out, and he's still attending even if he's not doing well, because who knows why he's not doing well. But if we chop that off, that may be the end. Maybe then the mom's going to say, get out of the house, and he's out of school. And then so we're in a cycle that we don't want to be in with that, or I don't want to be in.
Chick Krieger, Representative Barker. Usually satisfactory academic performance is a term that would discontinue a child from going to school. And so I imagine that we will define that and work with high schools. But I could see that not applying so much to a child attending high school, and then for the most part it's going to apply when they attend college.
Right. Okay, that's just, you know, if the legislative intent is that a kid attending high school would not be cut off, then I can support it, and as long as that's what I'm being told, I will.
Chairman of the committee, Representative Barker, I don't have the other bill in front of me. But it's clear that this bill for that particular situation would be probably better than the current circumstance. And if I remember correctly, there's an ambiguity in the law anyways, and that may have been the finding in that particular case. But child attending school means a child, I'm reading for the bill, line 7, who is unmarried, is 18 years of age or older, and under 21. So you now have a senior in high school who's 18 years of age, like a lot of kids. They turn 18 during the school year. Is making satisfactory academic progress. Currently, if I remember correctly, maintaining a C average.
Yeah.
So whatever is making satisfactory academic progress means, that would be, it's not a bright line test. It gives some discretion to the system and to the school to make that determination. So if you had a situation where a kid had something come up at home, like the family just gets divorced in the first semester and he's been doing well and all of a sudden he's gone down, well, if he's starting to show that he's coming up, that could be considered a satisfactory academic progress. And Shani, can you jog my memory on the other bill that we had passed out of here? We did away with the C average, but I don't remember what the specific language was.
As long as they stayed in high school or attending, they
attending high school.
And that was, I don't know that anybody was cut off, but a dad wanted to cut somebody off, and that was Schaffer brought that bill.
Right. Representative Schaffer brought that bill.
Chair Krieger, Council, that is correct. It did just remove the requirement for C-grade average for a high school student.
Okay.
And said that requirement did not apply.
Anything further on the bill? Questions? Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Senate Bill 1050 to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Boquist has moved Senate Bill 1050A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Objections? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative
Boquist? Sure.
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Senate Bill 1050A moves the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Representative Barker, Kerry.
Thank you.
I believe we're done for the day. We'll be adjourned. We'll be meeting in the morning at 8 to look at the bills that were assigned to the committee last week. And we'll get a posting probably for 1 or 2 tomorrow afternoon, whatever it is they want to run, those that we can have work sessions, and those that are hearing in a work session we'll have to put off to the next day.
Okay, so 8 in the morning here.
Well, not 8 in the morning. I meet regarding that.
But you're not asking us to get together at 8 in the
morning. We thought you were asking us. We're having a heart attack.
I'll do that for you.
Okay.
I won't make you come here and hold my hand.
Well, this I've sent pretty easy. Representative Butler had us going to get 6.